telling, but I'm telling on you.
That was Caroline Jones playing her new song, No Telling. And this is Taste of Country Nights on Demand. Dude, that was awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was sweet.
Thank you so much.
I feel amazing to get to be front row for that.
Oh,
that was
nice.
Really cool.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Give me the story of that song.
Wow, that's a heavy song. It's called No Telling. You know, it's this real kind of dark, bluegrassy, almost Appalachian vibes musically, and it really rocks if you listen to the record. So much fun to play live. Lyrically, it's a song about having the moral courage to tell a really dark, ugly truth. And it's actually about an abusive relationship I was in when I was younger. And it took me a really long time to be able to write a song about it or even really like speak about it. Because it took me a long time to process and like fully understand kind of what I'd been through. Because sometimes when you're in a relationship like that, that's really isolated, the only story you know is the story they told you. So it takes a long time to unwind. So the song is really about like having the courage to actually like tell the truth and get it out in the open. And then once you can do that, you can see it more clearly because other people are like, yo.
Well, what gave you the courage to sing and to release the courage song?
I think just years of distance and therapy and meeting my husband too. I think all those things. And then once you do have the courage to speak about it, write about it, sing about it, it's so much less scary because so many people have been through something like that on different levels, you know, to different degrees, unfortunately. And it's really sad. But, you know, it really does, like, I wrote the song because I wanted to reach the people who need to hear this message, you know, who need to hear that song. Because I know I would have needed to hear it, you know.
Had your husband heard of the story before the song?
Yes, yes, definitely. Okay. Yeah, it was something I had to process through for a while. And then I feel like the song had been kind of writing itself for actually like years. It'd been kind of like marinating because I'd never written about it. And so it came out really fast. And it's a really empowering song too, you know. And I think a lot of people, especially in the South, can relate. Like, there ain't no telling where I come from. Like, that's not what you do, you know, but hiding skeletons just ain't in my bones. I got to tell the truth. So it's like, you know, cause, secrets can be really, are really toxic. You know, we're meant to like carry each other's pain together, I think. And that's what music does.
What, if you have a first time fan or a listener, like you're a friend, you've been here before, but how would you describe your sound to someone that just tuning in?
I have so many different influences in my sound, but if I had to distill it down, I'd say it's pretty organic in terms of I play all these acoustic instruments. So it's pretty organic sounding. There's definitely some like Appalachian bluegrass influence there and some rock influence there. And I'd say it's pretty energetic, melodic, uplifting. Yeah.
All the Things has like a 90s, 2000 type vibe.
So does You're It for Me, Honey.
Okay, okay. Who from that era was like the power woman of country for you?
I mean, so many, right? Because that was, to me, one of the golden ages of females in country.
Yes.
Obviously, Faith Hill. She's so classy and beautiful inside and out. Martina. A little earlier than that, Emmylou Harris is like a huge influence for me. I love her voice, her songs. But yeah, that era, I'd say Faith, Martina, Shania. I mean, I know I sound cliche, but they're just undeniably great, you know, and their music holds up.
Meet them?
I have. I've gotten to meet Faith a long time ago, and I opened for her and Tim when they did their Soul to Soul reboot.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was amazing. I've never met Shania, and I have met Martina. Yeah. I actually got to talk to Martina on the phone because we were recording one of my songs called Keep It Safe at Blackbird. And, you know, her husband owns Blackbird, John McBride. And he was like, I wrote this song kind of as an homage to this Martina song called Safe in the Arms of Love. I don't know if you remember that song. Safe in the arms of love.
Okay. That sounds familiar.
And so he called her. He was like, Martinova, and it was so cool. Yeah, yeah. And I was like, hi.
Or was your like inner child freaking out?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
If someone were to listen to one song on Good Omen,
ooh,
which one would you pick to hand to them?
See, I wish I could know them a little bit, because depending on who they are, what they like, I would be like, listen to this song. Listen
right,
this
song. Right, right.
But I'd probably say No Tellin' or All the Things. I just love, I mean, so many other songs I love on the record, but probably one of those two speak really well for the whole record, you know?
As a writer, would you rather write songs that are sad?
It's really interesting because on this album in particular, I tackled more heavy subjects than I ever have before. And I think it's because I became a mom, and there's something about becoming a parent that just makes you even more empathic than you were before, and like more deep feeling. And so I tackled a lot more sad topics on this record, like abuse, like in Divorce in a Small Town. That's a really heavy song, sad song, The Bridge. So I don't know if I like it better. It's just, you know, my songs and my songwriting has always been a reflection of, you know, where I am in my life. And so, yeah, this is definitely more of a deeply feeling chapter. I think once you have a kid, it's just the range of emotions becomes so much more colorful, you know? And I think also it's a courage, like a strength and a courage that I got when I became a mom to talk about some of these things more.
Is it hard for you as a musician to hear like Miss Rachel singing?
Oh my gosh, that's such a funny... Yes, it is. Not her in particular, because we don't really listen to Miss Rachel, but he
like
has
Danny
these
Go
like nurse,
or,
he has okay. these like nursery rhyme books. And I'm like, that she can't sing. Like, I, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, why are you listening to her? On top of spaghetti? It's and so, I'm like, you know,
are they bad? Or all,
so, no, not all of okay. them, but some are. And also it's a hard thing because it's a very particular style, kid songs, almost like Broadway. You know how people, if they didn't grow up listening to Broadway, they hear it and they're like cringing.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like, cause it's a stylistic thing, you know, like I grew up listening to Broadway and jazz and stuff. So I'm more familiar with those styles. I think when you hear the kids, I don't know, it's like an over exaggeration of consonants and I don't know. It just sounds kind of cheesy, but.
Does it make you mad enough to maybe re-record some?
No. I'm like, I'd rather write a new song, but I could see myself maybe writing some lullabies or something one day. That'd be beautiful, you know.
What has changed songwriting wise that you can put your finger on since having a child?
I mean, there's just so much more life to write about. Like I said, there's so more colors and shades of life and emotion and just understanding humans better. I think it was Joe Rogan. He said on a podcast that like, once you have kids, then you start seeing other people and their experiences. You're like, they were a baby once. So it's like, it gives you even more richness into the human experience, you know? And so I think writing about motherhood in particular is like a very under, it's an amazing, like, you know, half the population can relate, you know? And I feel like there should be a lot more songs written about motherhood, and especially like the nitty gritty of it, like the parts that aren't so pretty or aren't, but everyone can relate to like changing diapers in the back of a car and figuring out like, when do I go back to work? What does that look like? What do I do with my life? What am I, you know, like all these questions that you have when you become a new mom. I feel like there should be more. I want to write like a concept album called Postcards from Postpartum. That's just like all about the nitty gritty of it, but maybe I'll do it next baby, you know? But like, I feel like so many women, like that's the country market. Like, why don't we have more songs about that? You know,
we did a breakout piece not too long ago about, statistically it's like harder for women in country once they have kids
right.
to be successful, but yeah. Nobody can figure out why.
No, you can. I mean, it's just logistics. It's literally just, I mean, it can be, you have to navigate, you know, maybe how the perception is changed of you, because like there's so much premium placed on women's youth and beauty. And then like once they become a mom, sometimes that can change. Like it's those old stereotypes, you know, but I think even more than that, it's just, it's hard in any field, like, but especially music, because you travel so much, it's hard. There's a lot more to navigate. There's a lot more on the mom than on the dad in terms of continuing work, you know? And so there's a lot more to navigate there. And most women want to be with their kids, not all. And there's a balance and there's a spectrum and we have so many more options now, but it's just kind of that simple. Like you, it's a lot to navigate for women, like once they have kids. So I was really intentional about when I had a kid, and I'm lucky to have a babysitter and a husband who supports me, and I can travel with my kid a lot, but most women can't do that, you know? So, yeah, it's real. I think that's the reason. It's just as simple as that. Like, it's just, if you have to choose between one or the other, or if you have to figure out how to balance them, it's just hard.
You're our only artist, speaking of traveling, that's ever played in the Sphere.
Yeah.
So we want to know, give us some details. Like what was it like backstage? Did like Kenny Chesney leave anything in the dressing room?
He didn't.
Okay.
Damn it. I should have told him. The Sphere. Okay. Well, I'm going to start by saying, if you get a chance to go to the Sphere, just go. Like, it doesn't even matter really what show you see. Just being in that venue is the wildest experience. It's the premier audiovisual venue in the entire world. Like, there's no place like it. And the screen is more than 5 acres. Like, so you're just imagining the scale, right? And there's 167,000 speakers. So the sound, like, it's just a wild experience. I feel so lucky to have gotten to play there. And I really applaud Zach for taking on that challenge, because he really had to, you know, fight to create that show. And it's a huge undertaking, because you have to create everything from scratch, because nothing can be fit to their screens that we've previously used, you know, because their screens are state of the art. It was amazing. I loved it. I loved performing there. I thought it was just, it's hard to explain. It's mind blowing. Like, when you go, you'll understand.
What are some, how do you feel about some of the reactions that the Zach Brown show got?
Okay. Here's how I feel about it. People, you know, obviously people want clickbait, right? And it's really easy for people to take things out of context and misunderstand. Now, the show, if you actually saw it, is about redemption. So it starts in this really dark, hellish place, and it's a story of Zach's redemption from a childhood of abuse to the peaceful, beautiful place that he's in now. And so the whole show goes from dark to light. And so I know a lot of people who just saw one image or one thing missed that, you know, and art, you know, is meant to tell these stories, and country music is no stranger to dark topics. But I think that because it was the opening of the show, I think it was very stark for some people who weren't expecting, like, whoa, you know what I mean?
Right.
And then but it was a story, you know? So it was very different, very, very different than like going to a Zach Brown concert. It was a real like production, and almost like a Broadway play, you know? So I think, that a lot of people who didn't see the show and just maybe saw an image or heard a story or whatever, then thought like, whoa, you know, what's going on? But obviously that's what happens on the internet.
are you going to play at the wedding?
I don't know. I would love to.
Are you going to go? Obviously probably.
Yes. I honestly don't know what their plans are, like how big of a wedding, but I know I would be on the short list of invitees. So okay. It just depends how big the wedding is.
And if he asked you to play, you would crank
of
it
course.
Up or you'd be like, I'm not working on my day off.
No, I'd be honored. I would be so honored. Yeah.
What I know, Zach really gives his band space to do like solo and stuff like that during live shows. Do you give yourself space to shred at your own live shows?
A little bit more and more a little bit more. I have an amazing band for this next tour. It's me and Mayor Meyer and Emma Jeff Marino. So it's the drummer is male, but everyone else is female. So we have 3-part female harmony. And Emma and Mare are just badass players. Mare plays like every instrument. And so I'm really excited because she comes from the bluegrass world, which is much more like taking solos. And so I'm trying to get her to challenge me more, you know. But yeah, I will. I'm so excited for this tour. It's a great configuration. It's a really great band.
Who's your top guitarist of all time, dead or alive?
I think Lindsey Buckingham.
Okay.
From Fleetwood Mac. I just love he's not a shredder in the way that people, You know, I also really love Vince Gill. He's one of my favorites. Or Mark Knopfler. Like, I'm not really like a blues shredder person as much in terms of my taste. So I love that Lindsey Buckingham did those really intricate finger picking patterns. I love Mark Knopfler, his tone, and Vince Gill. So those are probably my top three.
But like, you could pick up an electric and play like Sweet Child of Mine. Like, is that fairly easy for you?
No, because I'll tell you why. I never played. No, I'm just being honest. Because I never played in cover bands.
Okay.
So like the whole Zac Brown crew, like they played in cover bands their whole. See, I was a singer-songwriter my whole career, and I picked up different instruments when I started recording. Because I wanted to be able to play different parts, but I never like sat there with an electric guitar and people were like, Freebird, you know what I mean? Right. So I would feel inauthentic being like,
but could you though?
Like, I could learn it for sure. Like, I mean, I know, like I know that, but like to play it really well, okay. I would be like, Clay Cook, come on stage.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. Well, we're excited that you stopped by and for the new record, and we love playing your song on the radio and the fact that
you
still get to tour and do the Zac Brown, do your own thing.
Yeah, it's
your
so
mom.
Awesome.
You got a lot going on.
I'm very, very blessed. Thank you.
Thanks for taking
time. So good
time.
To see you, Evan.
You as well.
Yeah.
All right, let's turn to Billy Dukes to talk about the conversation here with Caroline Jones. What's going on?
With Caroline, I was most interested to hear about the Sphere and what it's actually like. And she came prepared with like some stats and how like artists have to totally rearrange their sets and their production to kind of to fit with what the Sphere does. Sounds like just a fascinating venue.
Yeah, and I don't know if I don't remember if this was on the interview or at right after we stopped talking, but she was saying that you get like dizzy this was after we stopped talking. Okay, she was saying that as some of the fans get dizzy, and as a performer, it's from that aspect. It's almost hard to figure out where the ground is, like. She kind of compared it to like a ski jump in the Olympics where they put the blue in the snow so you know where the ground is.
Yeah.
Yeah, she said it like really kind of messes with your equilibrium. And yeah, it sounds like I don't know. As someone that's only been on one cruise ship my entire life and I had to take some Dramamine, I don't know if that would be for me.
Funny you said you made the ski reference, or she did, I guess, because as soon as you started to say that, I was like, oh, it must be like those ski jumps. I was in my head. I've been watching a lot of Olympics. A lot.
Same.
I work from home, so I just set up right in front of the Peacock, and I get the speed skating going, and I get the slalom. Yesterday, I mean, I'm off on a tangent, but I watched, it was a team luge relay. That was kind of wild.
Oh, that's wild.
I was way into the curling and the Corys, and man, I could tell you all about it.
Yeah, I didn't know those curling things weighed like 40 pounds or something.
I think did you know that all that stone that makes up those rocks, they all come from one kind of obscure island somewhere in Europe?
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I've been watching, I watch everything except the... You know what I got to turn off, man? It's just, it's always been like that for me, is the cross-country skiing. I'm sorry. I don't want to see somebody walk through the snow with giant skis on. Like, I'm good.
How do you feel about the biathlon, though, where they do that, but then they stop and shoot things?
Not interested.
Oh, I love it.
Not really?
Yeah, it feels like raw and authentic. Like if you lived out in the Arctic, that would be something that you did, right? You'd do hunting, and then you'd spot a deer and you'd have to lower that heart rate enough to kind of get a good calm shot off.
Hey, find me one person that does that in their life. I don't see how that would be like them teaching us cursive when we were kids. Like, when are we using cursive?
True. You're not wrong. But
when are you going to be lost in the woods and need to go on a full triathlon? let me get my heart rate down. I see a deer. Oh, I happen to be running with a rifle. Hold on. Let me get my bicycle. Like, that's too much for me.
What when Carolyn was telling the story of No Telling, the song she performed, and it was a song inspired and about an abusive relationship, like what was it like in the room? Was it like heavy on her face? Did it look like that was pretty far behind her? Like, where was she at?
Yeah, man. That was a serious deal. I mean, she obviously knew the story. I mean, no, she was like legit, like it still is a thing for her, I think. And she explained, you know, in the interview too, that, you know, it was hard for her to, she's been working on the song forever. And yeah, there was a lot there. There was a lot there. You could just tell that, you know, I was almost to the point where I needed to be like, how about them Yankees? You know, right. I was like, oh man.
Yeah. And as an interviewer, it's always a little hard to figure out the next question, like that transition into the next topic, so that it's not just like, well, anywho.
Yeah. Sometimes you just got to jump, and sometimes you got to try to go on the off ramp, you know? So, but it was good. You could tell that the song is more to her than just telling the story. It's, she wants other people. She was shocked, you know, to hear and to see the amount of people that are going through the same thing. So I think it's helping her, part of her therapy, to get the song out there is what I think. But, you know, who am I? You know?
That's pretty valuable. I mean, the thing about writing a song about such a personal experience is, like, it's one thing to actually put it to paper and go in the studio and record it amongst kind of a close group. But if you do that and, like, you have any sort of popularity, like, then you got to talk about it, right? Because that's the song that everybody's going to want to ask you about. So you have to almost kind of come up with, like, a prepared way of talking. And I think we've discussed this before with Parmalee, how, like, when they talk about the drummer shooting, they have, like, a way of talking about it that doesn't bring them right back there every time, because they know.
Yeah.
That's what people want to talk about, even to this day.
Yeah, you know, and going back, it would have been cool to get, I wish I could have got a little bit more than what's out there already. You know, like she won't name who it is, and
sure.
Hold on, my alarm's going off. She won't name who it is, I read, and she stopped short of giving any details further, you know, stuff like that. But I guess I knew it was in her 20s, and then I kind of wanted a little bit more, but I didn't know what to say. So I kind of was like, like, I want to know if the guy had heard the song, but then that, I feel like, It's so much more than like a breakup song. I was like, I'm not going to ask that. Like, you know, you want to know if a guy heard a breakup song that you wrote about him, but this is like a little bit more. So I was like,
Hearing stories like this from artists, and I think of Lindsay L, because pretty long after, like, we really knew Lindsay L, like, we had worked with Lindsay L a lot. She was a good friend of Taste of Country. And then she released this whole album, and she admitted that she had been raped previously. Twice it had happened to her. She was sexually assaulted. I don't recall the nature of it or kind of how she described it, so I apologize if I'm not describing it properly. But that was, pretty stunning to me, and I think everybody, because she had never shared that before. But it sort of makes you kind of look around the room a little bit at the people you interact with on a regular life, and, like, more than likely a good portion of those people have been affected by something awful like that, be it abuse or sexual abuse or, you know, something with a parent that is horrible and traumatic. Or the flip side of that is you've probably interacted with people who are guilty of these kinds of things and maybe have never been outed in sort of a way. I don't know. It makes me a little bit more, is it wrong to say it makes me a little bit, maybe a little more pragmatic about the world we live in?
Here's what I'll say. How about them Yankees?
Well, all right, fair enough. I guess my point is, like, and this is the thing that she wants to do, is it makes you just aware that these kind of things happen, and it kind of creates a little bit of a safety net for the victims.
Absolutely, yeah. She wanted to give, it was almost like a way to give back to someone that was going through, you know, what she went through. I agree. And it's one of those songs like Thomas Rhett, It Goes Like This Is, or one of those where it has sort of a upbeat guitar melody or a happy sort of song, you know, so I like the way she described it, both the music instrument wise and then the lyrically wise, because it literally is two different songs like mashed together.
Did she bring the kid?
No kid.
Okay.
I love the part about Miss Rachel, or I love the part about all the people, the kid singers are all off key. I think that's great.
Yeah, she's a music critic when it comes to the the little kid shows.
Yeah, I guess I would be that way if they did like a little kid show and they did a radio scene. I probably would be like, oh no way, that microphone's not right. Blah blah blah. So that's why I wanted to ask. I wanted to know, you know, as a singer, when you hear something like that, how do you deal with it? You know, because she's probably hearing those songs all day.
It's always funny to me how quickly the turnover is of, like, little kid programming. Because my kids are, like, my youngest is 9. But, like, I had no idea who Miss Rachel was. I had never heard of Miss Rachel. My kids didn't listen or watch that show. But now it's, like, all the bee's knees. And, like, you know, a couple more years, it's going to be totally someone different. You get, like, a small window when you're in that industry.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, like, Miss Rachel, Blimpy, and Danny Go. For us, there's a new one that pops in. What's his name? We got another one.
DJ Raffy.
Yeah.
Okay. They're still making Danny Tigers. Okay.
Yeah. Danny Tiger. There's the DJ Raffy. There's a chili. Like, it's like, it's a crazy world out there, Billy.
I'm glad we're on this side of it. I am, anyway. You're not. You're right in it.
I'm in the thick of it.
Go get it.
All right. Well, thank you for checking out Taste of Country Nights on Demand. Next week on the show, we have a country legend, a country icon, Mr. Kiss This. Aaron Tippin is going to be joining us with his entire family, his son and his wife, who co-wrote Kiss This. And they both give us a great tidbit about that song and how it was an accident. So that's next week. Mark it down on your calendars for a Taste of Country Nights on Demand.